Stay tuned for Bob Enyart Live, but first, here's our Denver Bible Church update. Hi, I'm Pastor Bob Enyart with Denver Bible Church. You're invited to come on out this Sunday morning at 6200 West Hampton. That's near Hampton and Wadsworth. The book of Galatians is considered by many historians of the New Testament and theologians to be the first book written in the New Testament. Did you know that? It's a curious thing. Why is the book of Galatians considered to be such an early book? Well, the book itself is fascinating for a couple reasons that set it apart from other books of the New Testament. And in chapter one, there's a surprising thing going on that I think a lot of readers don't notice. And I want to point it out to you, but actually I don't really feel like talking about why. I'd like you to think through why. And we talk about this at Denver Bible Church now and then. But the Apostle Paul starts out writing this book of Galatians chapter 1, and he really makes an effort to distance himself from the other apostles. You know, Peter, James, and John, the 12, those guys. He mentions Peter, James, and John in the next chapter. But he actually makes an effort to distance himself from them. And why is that? Why would he do that? For example, maybe I'll give you a few quotes from Galatians chapter 1. But Paul says that when he became a Christian, when he got saved, he did not immediately confer with flesh and blood. What does that mean? He didn't talk to anyone? No, when he got saved, that was with Ananias. Remember, he was on the road to Damascus. He went to the city, to Straight Street, and met Ananias. And then Jesus Christ, who had intervened in Paul's life, and Paul repented and got saved, he heard the gospel from Jesus, but then he didn't go to the apostles. He said, I did not immediately confer with flesh and blood, nor did I go up to Jerusalem to those who were apostles before me, but I went to Arabia and returned again to Damascus. So why didn't he go right to the apostles? Why didn't he do that? In fact, he points out that he was not even known by face to the churches in Judea. They wouldn't even recognize him if they saw him. And then he says, after 3 years, I went up to Jerusalem to see Peter. So for 3 years, he was persecuting the church. Then Paul, actually Saul of the tribe of Benjamin, he got saved. And instead of going to the apostles, he just did his own ministry, which is a bit weird because it's not like they were far apart, and he just did not go to Jerusalem. But after 3 years, I went up to Jerusalem to see Peter, and I remained with him 15 days, 2 weeks, but I saw none of the other apostles except James, the Lord's brother. So he says, I didn't immediately confer with flesh and blood, nor did I go up to Jerusalem to the apostles, but I went out to Arabia and then Damascus. But then after 3 years, I did go to Jerusalem to see Peter, and I saw none of the other apostles except James, the Lord's brother. Now concerning the things with which I write to you, indeed, before God, I do not lie. Why is Paul being that emphatic? Why is he being so emphatic about not hanging out with the 12 apostles? What's with that? Have you ever wondered about that? At Denver Bible Church, we talk about things like that. He said, afterwards, I went to Syria, and I was unknown by face to the churches of Judea, which were in Christ. And Paul really emphasizes that. Why? Well, come on out to Denver Bible Church. We'll have fun talking about it. Now stay tuned for Bob Enyart Live.
Service with a wink and a nod.
to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, America's most popular, self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number, 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. You know, economic prosperity, a standard of living, those are good things. If you have those things without God, well, a lot of revenue without righteousness is not worth much. That's what the book of Proverbs says in the Bible. But it's really neat to have a high standard of living. When you have that, people live and don't die. That's part of what a standard of living is. And the Hurricane Isabel that hit the East Coast yesterday, that hurricane, it was big. It was the size of Colorado. That's how big the hurricane was. In fact, Colorado is about 390 by miles by 280 miles. It's about how big it is, 390 by 280. And that's how big the hurricane was. It's one big hurricane with 100-mile-an-hour winds, flooding, continued flooding. And it is a tragedy that people were killed as a result of the hurricane, but it was 9 people. Now, the number may have gone up since I've seen the statistics, but 9 people were killed. But, you know, if a storm like that hit somewhere else in the world, let's say Bangladesh, or maybe in Central America, right? Maybe if it hit in Belize, or if it hit where? In Africa, on the west coast of Africa, you may have had hundreds die, perhaps thousands. And so often there are storms that kill so many people. And one of the main reasons is because of the low standard of living. So when the economy is good, what makes the economy good? Hey, I thought this was a Christian show. Well, it's a news call-in talk show. By the way, our phone number is 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. What makes the economy good? When we serve one another. We serve one another. We do things that other people want to purchase or services they want to acquire. And then they need to pay for the products we make. The goods we're selling, the services we're providing, they need to pay us for that. So in order to pay us, if they want to buy whatever it is, let's say we have a new video in our store on the internet called Unlocking the Mysteries of Life. It's a third-party video, just a great video about intelligent design, top-notch scientists just tearing apart evolution, just tearing it to shreds. And this video aired on many public TV stations around the country, including Denver, of all places, on Channel 6. Shock of all shocks. A program against evolution. So we are selling that, either the videotape, the VHS tape for your VCR, or the DVD for $24.95. And other people did such a fabulous job putting that together that we paid them, we here at Bob and Your Life, we paid them for them to for a case of these videos. And we paid the shipping company to ship it. So we wanted the services they have. Now, you guys out there in Radioland and on the internet at kgov.com, kgov, you might want to see one of these videos. You probably don't need a case. But if you want one, it's $24.95 plus we charge shipping and handling, well, because the post office charges us. And so it costs about $30 to get this video. But it's such a fabulous video. But then if you want to see this video, the DVD or the VCR, the VHS tape, then you have to serve someone else. You have to serve someone else. Maybe you work at a tire shop and you put tires on people's cars. And how many tires do you have to put on people's cars and balance them to get enough money to buy a video? Well, you got to do quite a bit of work. And probably the people who work at tire shops all over the country, probably if they didn't get paid, they wouldn't work there. It's just, I'm going out on a limb here. But they probably wouldn't work putting tires on other people's cars, strangers' cars, 8 hours a day, 4 or 5 days a week, if they didn't get paid. And so because we produce things that other people want, we create an economy. And money is just a way of keeping track of who's done what for who. That's what money is. Money is an accounting system. It's the accounting of an incomplete transaction. And so the standard of living we have in this country, it's good that it's high, because when storms come, when sicknesses come, when difficulties come, we're able to weather it and get through it very often. And when the government taxes us, as they do, 50%, we're all taxed about 50%. You might not know that, but we are. When the government taxes us the way we do, well, it lowers our standard of living. And the government is a drain on the economy. Our government is out of control. But still, we work so hard, and computers have helped improve our productivity so significantly that even though the government is such a drain on every family's finances, even still, we're able to have a pretty good living. And if the government did not take as much money from us as they do, right, instead of a 50% tax rate, basically, if we had a 5% tax rate, because, by the way, if your family, you think, oh, we only pay 22% tax or whatever you think you'd pay, you don't. You pay more. Yeah, you pay about half. We all pay about half. If the government didn't do that, then your income right now, whatever it is your family makes, your whole family together, say you make $35,000 a year, say you make $40,000 a year, then if the government taxed us at a reasonably just rate, then you can double your income. You'd be making $80,000 a year overnight. If only the government did what was right. And then guess what? The prices of the goods and services you bought would go down. Things would be cheaper, your income would double, and the things you purchased would be cheaper. Now, wouldn't that be a step in the right direction to alleviate the difficulties and the poverty in this country? You bet it'd be a step in the right direction, but then the Democrats wouldn't get your vote.
At Bob Inyart Live and KGov.com, you'll find literature, audio, and video products that are a must for the library of any Christian interested in studying the truth of the Bible. You'll find essential material like the plot manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible that will clear up doctrinal issues. Then there's The Tree, a fun audio journey back to the Garden of Eden, where you'll learn about this most famous tree and its impact on humanity. Check out the Mount Moriah video. This video gives evidence for the resurrection, combining biblical and secular resources. It's a great witnessing tool. And don't forget the death penalty video. Learn that Jesus advocated the death penalty, and learn how God put the death penalty at the heart of the gospel. You can directly help Bob's outreach by subscribing to Best of Bob, Bob's Best 8 Shows of the Month, or build a Bible study library by ordering the monthly Bible albums. There's a lot more, so give us a call at 1-800-8-INYARD. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278 or KGOV.com.
Bob Inyart here with a live commercial break. Did you notice on our website at KGOV.com, if you've been there recently, that our goal as of yesterday was $6,000 toward the $8,000 that we're trying to raise, $8,000 to pay for 1 year's worth of Bob Inyart Live on the internet. And we're at $6,000. Well, let me be more accurate. $5,950. So we're basically, we're just about at our $6,000 goal. And our total goal is 8,000 by Monday night. Now, that's going to be tough because I'm going to be on my way to Hawaii on Monday. Right? There is a couple of fans of the show that are getting married in Hawaii, and they contacted our office and paid to underwrite a seminar out in Honolulu. And for my travel, hotel, airfare, car, and now it turns out my mom and pops are going along with me, so we'll split some of the hotel and car costs. But we could use your help to reach this 7,000. That's our goal by tonight, so call us at 800-8-NYARD. Wow, we just got an order for Unlocking the Mysteries of Life, that video. It's fabulous, by the way. And we have to thank Mary down in Colorado Springs for calling in and telling us on the air that she was in shock because she saw an anti-evolution program on public TV. I thought she was making it up, practically. But it turns out it was real. We checked their program log, and sure enough, they did air it, Unlocking the Mysteries of Life, and it's a great video. We got it. We decided to sell it, and so now it's in our store at kgov.com, or you could call us up at 1-800-8-NYAR and order it. All right, so if the government taxed us properly, instead of 50%, and why do I say 50%? Because the government spends about half of what the country produces. Our country produces wealth. How do we do that? We serve one another. We meet the needs of one another. We make products and provide services, and people serve other people. So we have an accounting system called money, and you serve other people, you get money, and then you could purchase the products and services of others. And what we produce in wealth in this country, the government spends half. So if you think you're only paying, you don't pay much in income tax, and you think you don't pay much, the government takes half of what you earn, one way or another. Everything you buy, not only is there sales tax, but there's utility tax and death tax and marriage tax and everything tax. And even when you buy a gallon of milk, there's not only the sales tax, if there is where you live on milk or whatever you buy, a gallon of gas has what, 65 cents of taxes in it? For every gallon, you buy 20 gallons. 20 gallons is $13 in taxes. Right? Whatever exactly it is, it's a lot. So at any rate, if the government didn't do that, if it only taxed us at 5% flat tax, that's it, everybody pays 5%, then your family's income would double and the price of the products, goods, services, rent, mortgage, cars, airfare, whatever you buy, the price of those things would go down. Because to make a gallon of gas, the Marathon or whichever gas company you're buying gas from, they have to pay payroll taxes. And they have to pay utility taxes on their phone bill. And they have to pay real estate taxes and inventory taxes and sin taxes. All kinds of taxes. And so the prices of everything we purchase are inflated to cover the 50% that the government taxes all of us. So your income would double and the price of virtually everything you buy would be reduced. Wow, would that be a good improvement in our standard of living? In fact, the average American family, if Christians ran the country based on the Bible's principles, the average American family could vacation once a year and go around the world. Yeah, go to Italy, spend a week in Rome, then fly from Rome to, where do you want to go? Israel, maybe? That's an interesting place. We like to go there. There's some terrorism there, but there's more crime here. And then keep going east and spend a week in Japan, maybe. And then maybe hop to Hawaii, go to Honolulu for a few days, and then back home every year if you want to do that or some variation on that theme. That's probably what the average American family could afford to do every year, take a world-class vacation if our government was not run by liberal Republicans and wicked Democrats, if our government was righteous. And that would be in the first year. And wealth is cumulative, you know. It would be amazing. The average American family, if they want to have a plane, they could have a plane. You know, a little Cessna or something. Now, the happiest day in a man's life is the day he buys his plane. And the second happiest day is the day he sells it. Or is that with a boat? I guess that's with a boat. Anyway, our phone number is 1-800-8-NYARDS, 1-800-836-9278. And for Hurricane Isabel to be the size of Colorado with 100-mile-an-hour winds and causing flooding at a massive scale and millions of families and businesses without electricity, and there's only 9 deaths. That's tremendous. If this would have happened in Bangladesh, 13,000 deaths. If it would have happened in France, it would have been a disaster of epic proportions. They can't even take the heat. Never mind a hurricane. So at any rate, I'm thankful for the prosperity we do have here in this country. Now let's get to some of the news of the day. Some of the news. We have a man in California was arrested. You know the Kobe Bryant case where a woman in Colorado accused him of raping her? And he bought his wife that $2 million ring when she agreed to stick with him and appear at the press conference and all. Well, a man in California offered to kill, to murder the woman who has accused him of committing a crime against her. A California man offered to murder her for $3 million. He was arrested, and he was arrested for soliciting a murder. He made the offer to Kobe Bryant's security director on September 8th, so 11 days ago. And his staff, Bryant's staff, contacted detectives, the police, and they set up a meeting where it's a 31-year-old guy. He's a Swiss bodybuilding coach. Now, does that mean he's from Switzerland or that there's a technique called Swiss bodybuilding? I don't know. But he was arrested in El Segundo, California. And he was given a bag full of money, but it was fake money from a studio, a movie studio. So it was prop money. And he had agreed to murder the victim for $1 million up front and $2 million after the fact. So it's good that this guy, of course, has been arrested. And what should the punishment be? What should the punishment be? I'm going to write down punishment here. Maybe somebody in the audience knows. The phone number here in the studio is 1-800-8-NYARDS. That's 1-800-836-9278. What a coincidence. That's the same number as the order line. 1-800-8-NYARDS. 1-800-836-9278. So the solicitation of murder and for a victim, no less. Wow. What should this guy's punishment be? What should it be? If you got any ideas, give us a call. Maybe if we could come up with it here at Bob and Yurt Live, we'll call California and see if we could propose a punishment suggestion to them. Here in Colorado, there's a really sad story of a couple, their little girl, Maya Kramer. Couple live in Conifer, Colorado, up in the mountains. Conifer is a beautiful town. And the first day they put their daughter in daycare, actually a babysitter's care, and the girl died. What a tragedy. And so we'll look at that story in a moment. First, let's go to the phones, 1-800-836-9278. Clyde in Arvada, speak your mind.
Oh, hi, Bob. Say, I really question whether you could describe us accurately as a wealthy country, considering that our debt is estimated. Now, this is government, home, business, and what is commonly referred to as consumer goods, as between $28 and $42 trillion, of which probably 99.99% was created out of nothing by the Federal Reserve Bank, essentially Republic Bank in New York City, which is a subsidiary of the Rothschild Empire in Europe. I really question whether we could consider to be even free, since it does say someplace
in
the Bible.
Hey, Clyde, why don't we stick with prosperity, since if we go from economics to political freedom, we'll never conclude anything. Life is complicated, but I made a point that we're a prosperous nation. So let's stick on that point.
Sure.
Let's talk about that. Okay, so you think now, do you agree that America has more physical wealth than the other nations of the world?
First you have to define wealth as God created it, which is what real wealth is.
Well, I didn't say, Clyde, I'm putting you on hold for a minute, unless I want to have a conversation with you. Clyde, I brought you back. Okay, sure. I didn't say we created rocks or gold. I said,
I
asked you if America has more physical wealth than the other nations of the world. If you want to be argumentative, you could move to where did the wealth come from?
You're very argumentative. That's okay, though. Go ahead.
All right. Does America have more wealth than the other nations of the world?
If you define physical wealth as land, minerals, resources, and that sort of thing, yes.
Let's add things like housing, air conditioning, clothing, automobiles,
sure,
airplanes, recreation, nice clothes, jewelry.
Nothing that's paper or electronically created, because that's not wealth. If you look in Black's Law Dictionary, that is not wealth.
Well, Black might be wrong.
No, I don't think Blackstone or Black is wrong.
Well,
not wealth, period.
I could bet you on both that we could figure out that they're wrong on various things.
A Federal Reserve note is not wealth.
All right, that seems to be what you really want to talk about.
No, not
so
necessarily.
Why don't we go
I'm
to
trying to make the distinction?
Well, you brought it up twice, so why don't we go to?
I'm trying to distinguish the system of mammon, man created appearances of wealth from real wealth.
All right,
you understand what I'm talking about?
Yeah, and I understand what you're talking about, and if you could hold on through the break, I'd like to expand your thinking on the topic. I know you have a lifelong commitment to this issue, but I'd like to expand that right after this. Bob Inyart, hey, thank you, those of you tuning in via the web, because we're at about $6,000 in our $8,000 fundraising goal. And actually, today, we now have the goal of hitting $7,000, and boy, will that be tough. But we thought getting to six would be tough, and we had $300 from a man in Hawaii, and $75 from a man in Indiana, and $500 from a man in California. And California came on the charts at 500, and Hawaii came on at 300. So who knows what might happen? We could use your help. Please call or just go to KGov and click on the store and donate. Help us out. Thanks. Bob Enyard here with a live commercial break. Thank you to those who have helped us reach $6,000 and our goal of $8,000 by Monday night. So we have a way to go. If you can call and donate, please do. In fact, the caller right now, Clyde, wants to talk about money, and we'll be doing that. We'll talk about money, and it's so important for Christians to be able to think clearly so we could take stands on issues that really matter. Isn't that great? And of course, here at Bob Enyard Live, we promote the Bible as the Word of God, Jesus Christ as our Creator and our Savior. And if you enjoy what you hear on this show, you might want to get some of our Bible teaching materials like the plot manuscript and the Bible study albums. In fact, you could sign up for an album a month for $34.95 a month. We'll deliver to you one Bible study album each month, and I think you'll love it. It's so much fun to study the Bible. We'll do it together. We get input from people around the country on the Bible studies, suggestions for other topics, and we've been doing this for years, and you could be a part of it. You can go to our store at kgov.com, kgov.com, or give us a call right here at 1-800-8-ENYARD. That's 1-800-836-9278. We're back, Bob Enyard Live. Now, Clyde and I'm going to go back to Clyde here in a moment, and we're going to have a conversation about money, really, and what is money. And I have some things, some very specific thoughts that I'd like to share with Clyde and questions. I think I know his position through and through, because I've read a number of books and I've spoken to many people for many years about the Federal Reserve. So I think I know his position, and I'm hoping I'll be able to share some ideas with him. So, hey, Clyde?
Yes, Bob.
All right, so let's talk about money. All right, now money, I've heard you say that the Federal Reserve creates money by fiat. They create it out of nothing, and so obviously...
Right. And actually have a lien on every piece of property and every individual in the country.
Yeah, well, if your house is mortgaged and you're paying for it with Federal Reserve notes.
No, even that's not the case.
All right, and even if your house is...
Let me explain to you what the case is.
Well, if your house is not mortgaged, you're still paying taxes on your property, but go ahead.
Well, that's correct, but there's no piece of property in the United States that's... You look at...
All right. You know what, Clyde?
Okay, let me...
No. I'm going to cut us off on property because you're distracting us again. I want to talk about money. You're upset that the Federal Reserve...
Well, money and property relate.
I know they relate. Everything relates in the whole universe. But let's talk about money. Why don't you take a shot at telling the audience what money is, and then I will. I'll give you a shot first.
You can find this in Larry Bates, whom you seem to admire a great deal. Larry Bates' book called The New Economic Disorder.
Yeah.
You can find it. What it used to be called, the Modern Money Mechanics, and it's published by the Federal Reserve Board in Chicago. They've since discontinued publishing it. But let me give you the two different definitions of money, and see if you're very smart, so you'll understand the distinction. Money is an item that has an intrinsic asset value. And that could be buttons if they were scarce. It could be sand if it were scarce. It's used as a medium of exchange. It could be salt like it was. That's where the word salary comes from, because the Romans paid their men with salt. That's a definition of money.
All right.
Yes, the Federal Reserve's definition of money.
Well, hold on. Let's wait there first, Clyde. Let's deal with that first. Just want to let you know that I reject that definition of money.
Right. Okay, well, why do you reject that definition?
Because because money is an accounting system of who owes what to who, and money, nothing has an intrinsic value. If you talk
yes,
to the,
does.
If you talk to,
yes, it does. Diamonds don't have an intrinsic value.
If what?
Diamonds don't have an intrinsic value.
No, they do not.
Gold doesn't have an intrinsic value.
Value is in the eye of the beholder. If you
now you're talking subjective.
No, I'm not.
I think you talk
if you're in the desert, you're the wealthiest man in the world in the desert,
right.
And you have a bag full of gold, it is worthless to you.
Right.
And so are the diamonds.
Right.
And money, if our money is based on gold, and then there is a huge gold find in Namibia, and so now billions of dollars of wealth are transferred to Namibia. Well, why? What did they do to deserve all this wealth? Economics, serious economics, not liberal economics, but the serious economist will tell you that nothing has intrinsic, no item has intrinsic value. Value is in the eye of the beholder. But go
That's
ahead.
Nonsense.
Now give us the Federal Reserve's definition.
That is absolute nonsense because the supply of gold since the beginning of time has increased. This, many items, commodities are the same thing, has increased at exactly 1% per year, the volume of gold. It would fill the entire world's gold supply would fill a room approximately 40 by 10.
All right, well... Well, let me,
let me respond to that.
It
could be any item that has intrinsic value.
Well, we're going step by step, so let me respond to that real quickly.
No.
I want to respond to what you just said.
Yeah, I understand.
About the gold supply. About the gold supply. Europe, we had our currency was based on the gold standard for the most part some few centuries ago. And in America, we started finding these extraordinary gold reserves, and we started mining them, the gold rush. And what happened over a period of a few decades is that tens of millions, if not $100 million worth of gold crossed the Atlantic in ships going from the East Coast to Europe, and it went into the banks, into their vaults underground. And coming the other way from Europe was machinery, steel, raw materials. And Europe basically provided a huge boost to American prosperity and our standard of living because we sent them gold, which they put into the ground, and they sent us locomotives with which we built our cities. And so you could argue that the Europeans were better off because they got the real money and it was sitting in their basements. But,
well, they could use it to buy anything.
But
most Europeans,
we became wealthy giving them our gold, and they became poor.
We're prosperous
as compared to us.
We're apparently prosperous, but we're not wealthy.
We prospered at their expense. Okay, now the people who have gold today, who promote gold,
right?
They have a lot of gold, and they say we should.
Jimmy,
use...
I'm not promoting gold.
Yeah,
I'm
okay,
just giving
but,
it as an example.
But the people
an
who do,
of...
the people who do. They have a lot of gold, and they say we should use gold.
No, I don't think that's what they say.
Well, the people who say that gold
not
is the real—
currency. That's long since passed.
Okay, the people who say that gold is the only real money and that we're
no,
better
that's
off—
that's what they say. They say it's a form of real
Okay, the people who say gold is a form of real wealth and it's more secure—
be accurate.
And it's not fiat or whatever. Those people—
it's a store of wealth.
All right, Clyde,
like food is.
Those people have a lot of gold. And if you will give them some of your Federal Reserve fiat bills, they will happily give you their gold. In fact, they will give you as much of their gold as you will possibly give them Federal Reserve notes for.
Absolutely. For a profit, of course. It's in theory, anyhow. Absolutely. Why not?
Well, the fact that they say gold is better than Federal Reserve notes, but that they take Federal Reserve notes for the gold shows you there's something else going on, a deeper dynamic that they're not even fully aware of, that they can't explain.
Well, you mean people have been trained to accept Federal Reserve notes?
No, because these people are the experts who know that Federal Reserve notes are bogus. But yet they take them and they give you their precious gold for Federal Reserve notes.
Define what you mean by bogus.
Why don't you go ahead and give the second definition, and then I'll tell you what money is?
Well, the Chicago Federal Reserve Bank defines it as a note, a debt-laden note that is created out of nothing, basically. This is what they really admit since they stopped publishing it since the mid-80s. Created out of nothing by, quote, the country's central bank.
Yeah, money by fiat, where money comes into existence at fiat, at the word of the central bank.
By decree.
Yeah, by decree. Okay. All right, so that's their definition.
That's the other definition.
Let me tell you. Let me tell you what money is. I'll tell you what it is. Now, you might not agree.
I understand. Go ahead.
This is what money is. If three families were stranded on a deserted island and there was virtually nothing on that island.
Right.
And, well, there was some trees with coconuts and there was bamboo shoots and there was the ocean all around. Well, they could come up with a system of money.
Correct.
Whereby they keep track of who does what for whom.
Correct.
Just on a piece of wood that they scratch in with a sharp stone. And the one guy says, you know what? I've been climbing the coconut trees and I got coconuts. And the other guy says, I've been out in the water and I'm killing fish. And another guy says, I'm good with bamboo shoots and I know how to make a shed. And so the guy with the coconuts wants a shed, but the guy doesn't want the coconuts. He wants fish. And they say, okay, you give me 3 hours worth of your labor, we'll record it here, and when I need 3 hours worth of fish from the other guy, we'll trade.
Right.
We'll trade.
You mean the kind of system the English had from James the First in 1100 to 1850? They used different denominations, different sizes pieces of wood. The king, the crown, the crown issued.
No,
I
didn't.
What you're talking about?
No, it's not the
that's
wood.
What you're talking.
No, it's not at all.
That's what the English did.
No, that's not what I'm talking about.
That
I said they're keeping track of who owes what, who's put what in. Money is an accounting system. That's what it is. Money is the accounting of an incomplete transaction. So if the guy with the coconuts and the guy with the fish, if they make an even trade, two coconuts for four fish, and that's it, no money has come into existence. But if the guy wanted the four fish and the guy with the fish didn't want the coconuts, he wants a few bamboos for his house, then he gives them the fish and they record this piece of information, which is money. And the fisherman now, he has some money on account. And later at some point, he may be able to redeem it for some bamboo shoots. And the moment he does, then that money is gone. It's expunged. It doesn't exist anymore. Money is the accounting of an incomplete transaction. That's what money is. And what is the best? Why'd you laugh?
That's the first time I've heard that definition. But that, like I say, there could be a lot of different definitions of what people, again, perceive, as you noted earlier in our conversations, what they believe.
All right. Now, hold on. Hold on. You said money is an item with intrinsic value. When we get back, we're going to talk about your salt. Bob Enyart here, 1-800-8-ENYART. That is our call-in line. And, hey, the fun thing to do in life is to learn. And we can learn things that are wrong. We could learn things that are right. And God is pretty sharp. I mean, he made us. He made the universe. He's obviously knowledgeable and powerful. And the more you learn about him, you realize he's wise, too. And so he has given us a book called the Bible. You might not believe that. Certainly, you shouldn't believe it just by hearing the claim. You should look at the evidence. I've spent, since 1973, 30 years looking at the evidence that indicates that the Bible is the Word of God, that God revealed the Scriptures to us. And when you start to study that book, it is really exciting. So I invite you to come on out to Denver Bible Church to study with us. If you live out of town, well, you could get the Sunday sermons mailed to you, four sermons a month from the pulpit of Denver Bible Church by calling us here at 1-800-8-NER. You could also get our monthly Bible study albums. We've been studying the Bible for years. Friends of Bob and Yurt Live, and we get together once a week with a live audience, so to speak, and we have a really neat Bible study, and we've been recording them since when? A long time, 1998? 98, maybe? 97? That's quite a few Bible studies. Figure 45 Bible studies a year. So, hey, we have really covered this book, the Scriptures. And you could be a part of it either coming out in person or calling us and subscribing to the monthly Bible study album, or just check one out at 1-800-836-9278. It's 1-800-836-9278. So Clyde said that money is an item that has intrinsic value. I countered with there are different camps of economists in the world. There's the liberal camp that wouldn't know an economy if it hit them in the face. And then there are
liberal, Bob.
What's that?
You're very liberal on the definition of money.
Well, I disagree with you only because my bias.
Okay.
My bias is that liberal is left wing, and left wing.
That's a fiction. Left and right are controlled by the same people. That's just a fiction. Left and right, Democrats and Republicans. All this created just to confuse people.
So, Clyde, there was no left and right before there was the Republican Party and the Democratic Party.
The Republican Party was created by Wall Street in 1854.
And there was no left and right. Those concepts didn't exist before 1854.
No, not in the sense that people think of them as being different poles that basically represent different moral points of view.
Clyde,
no.
Those concepts go back through the centuries, through the millennia.
I understand that.
Then left and right couldn't have come into existence in 1854.
No. You asked the question, where did the Republican Party came from? Of course, the Democrat
no,
Party.
No, I didn't ask that question.
Was a slavery
that question
party
is so unrelated to our conversation, I would not have brought that up.
Well, that's exactly the historical truth and record if you do a little bit of research.
Let's get back on track. You said that money is an item, the definition you think is right, that money is an item that has intrinsic value, and you gave an example.
Let me define what that means.
No, Clyde, we all know what that means. Please.
No, I don't think you do.
Well, okay, let's skip it anyway. Let's talk on sheer ignorance.
Okay.
Okay, so examples you gave of former objects of money, monetized objects, were salt or wood, different sizes of wood. And I think you would...
Salt represented labor, incidentally.
But I think you would acknowledge...
The wood did not.
But I think you would...
Wood was fiat.
Okay.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. And through history, shells have been used as money. All kinds
of
things have been used as money.
Oh, absolutely.
And things that were used as money at certain cultures and periods of time later on are looked at as mere artifacts or oddities.
Correct.
Or it's just laying on the ground, or there's tons of it here on this hillside and it's virtually worthless, whereas in the past people would have given you a month's worth of labor for some of those objects.
Right.
Those objects have value in the eye of the beholder.
I can guarantee you, Bob, right now, I can tell you right now, you take a silver dollar and put that before somebody and tell them that it has 99.99% silver. And then you put a dollar bill in front of them, and I can tell you which one, without any previous knowledge, people instinctively know. They instinctively know.
Well, the people who instinctively bought gold over the last 30 years took a bath. They lost a lot of money by their instincts.
there's a lawsuit. Wall Street and the bankers have been manipulating that. There's an interesting lawsuit.
Well, if people, Clyde, you just contradicted yourself. If people instinctively knew there was more value in silver and gold, then Wall Street would not be able to deceive their instincts. So either Clyde, you just said they instinctively know there's more money in the metal than in the bill.
If they know the history.
Well, that's not okay. Well, that's not what you just said.
Of how those
right.
two items
so anyway, I wanna
held their buying power for 2,000
right.
years.
So, Clyde, I know that so I gave you the definition of what money is. Money is the accounting of an incomplete transaction. And now I'm going to add another piece of the picture to you so you can see how the money supply grows. If these three families are on this deserted island and they made that transaction, two coconuts for four fish, and there's a certain amount of money that they're keeping track of. They're not using coral as objects of money. They're keeping track because they're into the information age. They're just keeping track. And now if they continue to serve one another in any way imbalanced, then the money supply will grow. They don't need gold. They don't need wood. They don't need shells. All they need to do is keep track of who has done what for who as far as the value of their time and their effort.
So you really mean that money, which is not new to me, what you just said, you mean money is a medium of exchange between people or families?
No.
Just a minute.
Go ahead.
Let me finish, please. I let you speak now. Let me finish.
Since it's my
medium
show, I appreciate
of exchange that. Between different families, individuals, or groups, and for items that have a disparate or a distinct difference in value. Is that what you mean?
No.
Because that's exactly what it is.
No, because a medium of exchange, money is the accounting. I'm speaking very explicitly. Money
you
is the accounting.
You need to go to Economics 101 then again, Bob.
Money is the...
That's exactly what money is.
I am correcting your economics class. Money is the... Clyde, money is the accounting of an incomplete transaction, and you might change the medium of exchange, or you might do away with a medium of exchange and fulfill the monetary obligations by direct trade of goods and services without any medium of exchange. Money is the accounting of an incomplete transaction. And the more we do for one another, the more incomplete transactions that exist. The more value in our incomplete transactions, the more the money supply increases. That's what.
You know, Bob, the trouble with talk show hosts in general.
Yeah.
Is they try, like a lot of individuals, and I'm probably as guilty of this as anybody.
Yeah.
They try to be experts on things which they have no real knowledge.
Clyde, the books you've read. The books you've read, I have read, Clyde.
It's just nonsense.
Clyde, have you heard of Ludwig von Mises?
It's nonsense.
Have you read Ludwig von Mises?
I read his book a long time ago when I was in college. I can't say I remember a lot of it.
How about his book on money and credit?
Probably not.
All right, I've read it.
A lot of recent books. Let's say in the last 20.
All right,
or 30 years.
It's one of the economic books I've read that I've enjoyed more than others. His theory of money and credit, but I'm not attributing this definition to von Mises. But what I'm saying is, I'm not ignorant about your camp of economic theory. I'm not ignorant of it at all, Clyde. I disagree with
it. I'm not ignorant of what you're saying either.
Yes, you are. Clyde, you said you had never heard that definition.
Well,
and it's
if you check that definition, Bob, that definition is not that different from what I define money as being. The only difference is intrinsic value.
Well, intrinsic value,
you didn't want to hear the definition, but I'll give
error.
It to you anyway. It has labor and some capital involved in its production. Did you hear me?
Yeah, I heard you. And labor in some capital producing something does not give it intrinsic value.
Oh, yes, it does.
No, it doesn't. People, diamonds could lose their
Item of value.
As we continue to create artificial diamonds, could lose their value to become almost worthless.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter how much it costs to dig them out of the ground. Value is in the eye of the beholder, and serious economists would mock someone who doubted that. Value is in the eye of the beholder. There is no such thing as intrinsic value.
Now, sure there is, because history has proven that there's intrinsic value. Bob, that's a nonsensical.
Well, if history,
if you suggest, you on the radio station every night.
If you are
talk about the historical.
All right, hold on, Clyde. If you're going to appeal to history, to the testimony of history, then you're going to have to agree that in the greatest economy in the world, they have judged that Federal Reserve notes are more valuable than gold. If you're going to appeal to the testimony of history.
Biblical history also, incidentally. not just human history.
Because they used, you're saying because they used gold or silver in the Bible.
Oh, they used a lot of things.
As their
Bible.
Medium of exchange.
They used
you're
a
going
lot of
to
things
say that,
were scarce.
That is God's authoritative statement, that is.
No, I'm saying they used a lot of, now just listen again.
Yeah, I heard
they
what
used
you
a lot of things.
As money.
As a means of exchange of disparate.
Right.
Transaction.
Now, okay. Now, and since we're almost out of time,
I'll let you go, Bob. We'll continue sometime later.
All right,
Take
Clyde.
Care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for your
Good
call.
Night.
I appreciate it. I was going to say, since we're almost out of time, I would like to summarize the 2 points I made and add a third point. That money is the accounting of an incomplete transaction. The more we serve one another, the more value in the incomplete transactions we have between us, the money supply grows. And number three, the best monetary system is the system that does the accounting as effectively and inexpensively as possible. That's the best monetary system. If you can effectively do the accounting to keep track of who's done what, how much has one person improved the standard of living of everyone else. And to the extent they've worked hard, then they have accumulated money. But if your money is sitting in gold and there's another gold rush and you worked for 40 years and you have $80,000 worth of gold and there's a new gold rush and now all of a sudden your gold is worth $62,000, well, what did you do that was so unreasonable that you should lose 23% of your wealth? Well, you didn't do anything. You were just holding gold thinking that that was the ultimate monetary system, but it's not. Money is the accounting of an incomplete transaction. And the more expensive of an accountant you have, right? Do you want to pay your accountant more than you need to or just what you need to? Gold has value in the marketplace. And if gold is going to be the heart of our monetary system, then you're going to have billions of dollars worth of gold or trillions sitting in basement vaults, not being used in electronics, not being used in jewelry or in architecture, just sitting in dark vaults with no one seeing it but security guards. What's the value of that? Now, money is the accounting of an incomplete transaction. The accounting of an incomplete transaction. And the more we do for one another, the more the money supply increases. How do you manage that? This is Bob Inyart reminding you to do right, risk the consequences.